The following is a part of the Radio Memphis On Demand service. It originally aired live on Radio Memphis and has been edited for time.
Part of being a program director at Radio Memphis is making sure the personalities are doing what they should. Now, while I was performing an air check of Dee's live show, Radio Memphis Around the World, I managed to stumble onto an interesting conversation she had about the business. Check this out.
The problem with social media is, or even the radio, just regular terrestrial radio, you don't know who's listening.
No. I know.
I don't know who's on the other side of the signal.
I know.
You know what I mean? I mean, you know, as far as we know, you know, some president of a record label could be listening to our conversation. That I don't know, because there's so much signal out there, you would never be able to find it.
Imagine that.
So the same thing with Facebook. You never know who's looking at it, or Instagram, or, you know, any of that type of stuff. You know, people just don't, you know, understand. I mean, I see people all the time on Twitter, you know, getting these debates, these bans over, you know, their show sucked last night on, and it goes back and forth for an hour, and then all of a sudden it disappears. Well, I guarantee you in that hour, somebody took some screenshots, and if somebody looks hard enough, they can go into the cloud and look at it.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you just, that's one thing I tell everybody. You know, you can type whatever you want. Don't hit send. As soon as you hit send, it's over.
I wouldn't even type it, because I would stumble, Junior. I would, like, stumble. I would sneeze. You know what I mean? I would hit enter, like, by total accident and be like, well, crap. You know? No. You know, if you... Look, you know, I have this thing. With the kids at the station, okay? With people, with Rick. You can ask Rick. You know, I don't even mind telling everybody this. When we first got started, you know, Rick is probably one of the most talented, you know, producers, and one of the most talented people when it comes to, you know, this business that I know. Otherwise I wouldn't still be doing this with him. But that being said, he came out of quite the crash, you know, out of terrestrial, before he kind of devised this Frankenstein idea of doing what we're doing now, you know, which turned out to be amazing. And, you know, during that first year or two, I mean, I basically had to sit on his fingers, you know, and was like, look, don't post Jack. If you start thinking about stuff, and I cannot tell you, man, we were having 5 to 6 phone calls a day the first 2 years. Hey, I just want to, you know, talk to you, because I was getting ready to type something. Oh, don't type, Jack. Call me. Let's talk about this. I mean, it was like that, you know, because it was, you know, this is coming from somebody who is also, you know, by virtue of what he does, you know, he's a performer, he's an entertainer, you know, he's on air, you know, he's a conversationalist. So, you know, there's a tool in front of him that, like, I can just talk my mind. No, you can't. Not at the expense of our station. You know, I know you're mad. Hold on, breathe. And, you know, he has come around full circle, you know, in such an amazing way, you know, to the point where, you know, he's still got friends and stuff that are, you know, that are in the last ends of that business, you know, and is trying to be supportive and trying to be there for him, and, you know, and maybe like, man, I get it, and you know, I call it being Buddhist, you know, to an extent. He's really turning the chicken coin. It's okay, because this would not have happened, and we wouldn't be doing this had these things not happened. But it took, Junior, it took like 2 full years. I know. That was hard. But there's something to learn from that, you know? Like I said, all these different artists and stuff. You know, Junior, you come across a lot of different people, a lot of different artists and stuff like that. And, you know, so the first thing you tell them is that, okay, we're obviously cleaning up your social media, you know? But that's like too easy, you know what I mean? That's like, okay. Because think about it. When somebody's got, you know, when somebody's got rock star eyes and they're like, I want to do this. And you say, okay, first thing you got to do is clean up your social media. This is like the equivalent of, you know, Daniel when he went to go see Mr. Miyagi. And he was like, okay, I want to fight in the tournament. What do I got to do? He goes, you're going to paint the fence. It's like, what? Now, mind you, painting the fence helped them, but, and mind you, what you're saying helps them. But there's also got to be something else, you know, that you tell them too, because they're going to bother you.
You got to remember, this probably only pertains to the last, I don't know, 10 years.
Right.
Before that, it was, you didn't have social media like that. You know, I mean, a PR company did all the album releases. You know, the commercials went out and they aired on the right things and all the, that's when you had record stores and all the props went to the record stores and things like that. But first thing I tell them is always change your social media. And then I said, me on it. I'll look at it. And when you get that cleaned up, you let me know. And usually that afternoon, they'll send you a message. It's all cleaned up. You go look at it. And they may have taken a couple posts down. But like 99.9% of the time, they're still like incriminating stuff on their social media.
Right.
And then you kind of say, you know, this is probably really not the thing you want to say. You know, if you want to do it, you have to kind of word it a little different. Yeah, you kind of work from that point. Then after you get that, then you say, now you have to do, if you want it, you got to work for it because nobody's going to hand it to you. I mean, you got yourself a CD or an album, an EP, you know, what do you got done? And does it sound good? Let me listen to it.
Right.
Well, we got everything on, MP3s or it's, you know, you got to have something physical. Granted, you can send that to, you know, like some of the stations and the internet stations, but if you're really trying to be on a terrestrial station, you know, they physically want a copy.
Yes. Yes.
So you got to have some kind of hard copy, CD, record, vinyl, you know, whatever.
Yes.
And then you kind of go from there. And then, you know, the whole time you're doing that, you know, you have to, if I was taking over ABC Band, every day, three or four times, I would check their social media. I'd make sure that they're, you know, the posting, if they're on Instagram, they're posting good photos or not. They're not, like, sending pictures of their food or, you know, drunken nights at the bar where they played the night before.
Right.
You kind of want to get them into the professional state at an early age of being a rock star to move them up. So many people that I've worked with over the years, and I can't tell you the number, but I can tell you probably one out of 250 bands that I work with actually get it.
Wow.
Actually get it.
Wow.
They make it to where like they can do a headliner tour for somebody, or they can go do a tour and be out of the country, or they can do a tour of the United States, and then at that point, you know, they move on. But I mean, it's like one in 250 bands. And a lot of them, probably 90% after a month, give up because it's too hard.
Yes.
They have to post every day.
Yep.
They have to, you know, they have to put sociable stuff on there. They got to talk about what they're working on the album.
Right.
They got to try to put, you know, links over to the YouTube channel if they have it, you know, links over to Instagram, whatever it should be.
Right.
And then they're trying to promote themselves. And then within 60 days, another 90% of what's left is usually gone. And then at the 90-day mark, out of like 250 bands, you probably have about 10 left. And then usually the 6-month mark, if they've made it to 6-month mark, that means they're going to make it. And that's usually one band out of 250.
That's a hell of a ratio there, brother.
And I'm not just talking in the United States. I mean, I had an office in London on Abbey Road. I had an office in Sydney. And you know, I used to go to New Zealand and Sydney all the time.
Right, I did.
So I'm talking universal bands. You know, I used to, I went to Japan a couple times to our office there, but, you know, in Europe I went to a lot. I went to Switzerland quite a bit.
Right.
So, I mean, just dealing with bands in general, just it's not in the United States. I'm talking about around the world. If you take a compilation of all the bands around the world, that's what we did.
Wow.
And typically would be one. I like 250 or so that would make it. You know, every once in a while you get lucky, run across two or three out of the bunch that would really do good. And they would probably make it for a couple of years. And then, you know, they just say, well, you know, it's, you know, we haven't made it. And I said, you got to hang on a little bit longer. And then, you know, they stop doing what they're doing. And then you come and find out that, boom, you know, they were ready to go on X tour with X person. And
wow.
They blew it.
They blew it.
So, once you get past the 6-month mark, and you've been doing it you know, just keep doing it. I mean, because you don't ever know who's actually physically watching you and who's checking up on you or, as you say, stalking you.
Right. Well, that's a fact. And, you know, it's funny because going back to the data thing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's everybody's like, oh, well, they've only got like 2 likes. Like, nobody's paying attention to them. It's like, no, they are. You know what I mean? Or if, you know, even if you've got, you know, some of the pages and stuff, I know it's like it's so misleading, especially with Facebook. I mean, Facebook is a bad example just because of all the crazy news they've got going on right now. But, you know, everybody's like, you know, organic reach versus paid reach versus, you know, X amount of, you know, people that, you know, obviously there's ways, ins and outs of around of everything. At the end of the day, that information is still held hostage. You know what I mean? And you really, truly, you're only going to be given X information, either A, if you're the gatekeeper, you know, or B, you're paying for it, right? So regardless of the fact that, you know, if you truly just treat it as anybody could see this, even if, you know, it's that equivalent of whether you're playing to 5 people or you're playing to 5,000, you know what I mean? You give the best damn show you're going to give because you don't know who those 5 people are.
Right?
The same thing.
You know, and it also goes, you know, a lot of people say that, you know, we're not, you know, you said something about like 2 likes on a post.
Hmm.
You know, granted, 2 people that, but there's probably 300 people that read it. If every day, now when I say every day, 7 days a week.
Right.
If you say you want to post 3 times a day, you pick a time in the morning, say 8 a.m., and then you pick like a noon time and then like a 4 p.m.
Right.
You know, depending on, you know, where you're at, but or your job and all. But if you post every day at those times religiously, Monday through Sunday, I guarantee you within 2 weeks, you will up your likes.
Bingo.
Because now your stuff is always going to be in the newsfeed. Whether you have 100 likes or 500 likes, it's going to get to more and more people in their newsfeed.
Yep. Yep, yep.
And then they're going to be like, oh, look at this. And then they click on it, and they, you know, Billy sends it over to Johnny, and he shares it on his page, and then Johnny clicks, and then he shares it over to Mikey's page, and it just goes along. And, you know, guarantee you within 2 weeks, if you post 3 times a day, 7 days a week, that'd be 42 postings in 2 weeks.
Yep.
I guarantee you, you will have some more likes on your page, and you'll probably have some, start getting some messages or some emails.
Well, yeah.
Or you take the questions.
There's a big difference in what you're just saying. It's not just likes per se, as much as it is engagement. You know, that people are actually participating in what you got going on. You know, because they're interested.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, just because 2 people liked it, it could be 400 people that have read it. You know, and that's the tough part is. If Facebook doesn't, Facebook or any of the social media really doesn't tell you that.
No.
You know, so if you're ABC Band and you have 1,000 people that like your page and you're getting 1 like every day, but there may be 250 people that are reading that or seeing it.
Absolutely.
They're just not clicking on it.
Absolutely.
And the A&R person is surely not going to click on it and say, you know, they're going to be suspicious. Why is this ABC record label clicking on our stuff every day? You know what I mean? So they're going to be incognito. So they're just going to be stalking. That's basically what it is. I mean, you coined the term. I didn't.
I did. Well, because that's what I do too, you know? And, you know, it's funny that you even kind of bring that up because there's so many stories. There's so many things. Everybody can be so swayed by a post or an article or a statement from a company, and if they tell you that something is gone, something is dead, something is, you know, no longer relevant, you know, people have a tendency to jump on the bandwagon to go, you know, oh, because it's so-and-so that said it, they must be true, instead of actually doing the research also, right? So one of the things I ask you is that, you know, when you're talking about these new artists and stuff, you know, they're being told that it's a streaming world. They're being told that it is, you know, there's a lot of things out there that are telling everybody that physical formats are dead, right? And that's not technically true in terms of, you know, CDs, albums, tapes.
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
The part that is how they obtain them. That's where you used to go to, like, what was the something Tunes was there in Memphis on Poplar Avenue.
Poplar Tunes.
Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Used to go in there, and they'd have vinyl, and they'd have CDs, and you could buy a stereo there. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's very few record stores. If you find one, it's usually somebody selling used CDs or, you know, something like that. Nothing with new vinyl or anything. Not
right.
A real record store. Very far and few.
Right.
So in order to gain the material, you have to do a little searching. So if you're a band and you have an album, you know, don't get it to where they gotta, you know, buy it off a funky website and you know, nobody wants to use PayPal or whatever it is. You know, you want to make it accessible to everybody.
Yes.
You know, put it on your Facebook page or, you know, put it on your Instagram or your Twitter, whatever it is.
Right.
You want to tell them how to get it, because the more you get it out there, And the more you go, you know, make sure you do it. If you have T-shirts, try to sell them. And recently, a band that I've worked with for several years, they called me and they had a little tour, and so they scrounged up some CDs and T-shirts, and I didn't realize they're only taking like 50 CDs and like 25 shirts, but the second night they were sold out.
Aww.
And they were like, wow, we didn't realize that. So, you know, I mean, I know it costs money to do it, but you kind of have to look, because for like 3 or 4 days, they didn't have anything to sell. And it hurt them for not picking up any type of people who would follow them.
That's right. And I'm glad you put it that way, too. You know, one of the things, and obviously the reason why I even bringing this up is because somebody actually was cool enough to share, you know, quite the article, and it was quite striking in the sense of saying something, you know, and of all places, you know, Rolling Stone. Before we go any crazier with that, because I know how there's a lot of people that, you know, kind of like lost faith in Rolling Stone, and all of a sudden they're gaining faith back, and then they're losing it, and they're gaining faith back. But either way, sometimes, you know, certain articles come through, right? And they were talking about pretty much, you know, the end of owning music, you know, the end of having CDs, the end of having, you know, in downloads and stuff, and that ultimately everybody is just going to subscribe to streaming, and that's just the only way that they're going to listen to music. And, you know, this particular article goes into this, you know, this diatribe of how things are, and to a certain extent, yes, you know, it is correct, because I mean, even Daniel Glass, okay, jumps in, Glassnote Records, all right, and he talks about, you know, he talks about the world as far as, you know, going into pretty much streaming mode. Now, at the same time, though, since we're talking about our unsigned and indies and stuff that are trying to get their leg up into the deal, at the exact same time, the same article said that, of course, if you're an independent, you know, you still kind of have to have that CD, and it was very much the reason what you said just a few minutes ago, Junior. You know, if you're sending something to a radio station, if you're sending something to, you know, an A&R person, if you're sending something to a management group and stuff like that, it's one of those, it's the calling card. You have to have that.
Correct. I mean, if you don't have that, how are they gonna define you?
Well, okay. So somebody sends you a CD. What are you looking at? What are you thinking for? What are you looking for?
You know, I used to look at the album art. And some of the album art, because it's different generations, really doesn't go with me, because I don't understand some of it.
Gotcha.
I stopped looking at the album art. But I kind of read it, you know, as I put the CD in, I kind of read it. And then, you know, you just, no matter how much you put the first song on, it's like, oh my God, I can't listen to this. No matter how bad it is, you listen to each song from front to back. So if there's 6 songs, it's, you know, roughly 21 minutes long. Now, you, 21 minutes, I know you're not going to get back, but you have to listen to it. Because you may hear that one thing, you know. And then you can call them up and say, yo, Pete, that one thing you did in song 5 is what's going to save you.
Yes.
You know, so, and that's what I did. You know, I mean, we've talked several times before off the air. I told you I've listened to these albums. You're like, how could you listen? You just never know what you're gonna find on an album.
Right.
You know, I mean, that may be the Easter egg that I'm looking for this band. I mean, that may be the clue that I need to sign these people and, you know, give them a record deal.
Right, right. And that would make sense. That would make perfect sense, you know, and listening to, you know, something like that. And it's funny because, you know, there's a lot of people that are kind of going into effect of wanting to, you know, create, and this is just kind of getting started, you know, not people that have been in the business or have been doing this for a long time. The ones that are just getting started, feeling the need to all of a sudden have to have 12 and 13 songs for one album. You know, I personally think that's not a good idea.
Well, and that's true. And this is what I tell people. Like, when I recently met somebody. I got a catalog of like 75 songs.
Oh, wow.
I put out 7 albums.
Wow.
Anyway, put 10 songs on album. I should stop. Don't do that. Don't waste your money. What do you mean? Because what about if it flops the second album? You got the rest of them already done and you're stuck with them. Here's what you do.
Right.
You take your songs. You narrow them down to about 5. Put them in the group. Then out of those other 65 you got, you take 5 of those best songs and you narrow them down to another group of 5.
Right.
And then you take another group out of that 60 songs in the best and put them down to 5. So now you got 3 groups of 5. Now you play with those 3 groups of 5. You're only going to have 1 group of 5 when you're done. And I tell everybody, if you put out a little 5 song sampler every 8 to 10 months,
yep,
you will get more exposure than you will doing an album every 2 years. Because 8 months, 10 months, as you know, in the radio business, is the amount of time that you come on the scene and you fall off the scene.
Yes.
You know? So just about the time that your music is, you know, everybody's like, oh, I'm tired of listening to ABC band. You know, what's next? You have another album coming out, a little 5-song sampler coming out.
Right.
And you do that.
Right.
And you do that for 8 to 10 months. And you keep doing that. And then maybe after you got 3 of them down, you do like a 12-song album. You throw it out. 8 months later, you go back to the 5-song deal.
Yep.
Because like I said, every 8 to 10 months, sometimes it's depending on the band, but it could last as much as 12 months.
Right.
The system recycles itself.
You're right.
So if you came in January, by the end of August, ABC band, nobody knows who you are. You've done lost in the crowd.
You know, and
you're
it's
lucky you had a couple good songs. You may last the Halloween. And then people will be like, who's that? Because they're already trying to get the attention of who's coming out for Christmas.
There it is. So you said it.
So if you do it every 8 to 10 months, I guarantee you, and most people won't tell you that, but I guarantee you, and I've done it for years, especially in the last, well, let's see, I've been retired 3 years now. So 10 years, for the last 13 years now, I've seen people do that and done very well with it.
You know, it's funny you bring up that formula and stuff too, because one of the things, and ladies and gentlemen, you know, we've been having this conversation. It's so funny because I want to remind everybody, I've been hanging out with Mr. Junior Gregatus, and we're having a fantastic conversation about the business. I mean, this is actually a really fantastic way to kind of wrap up the year and give you guys some food for thought, because it's given me some re-energized thought in my head about some things. Speaking of, you know, everybody's being pushed into the face about it's a singles world. Now, mind you, it's always been a singles world. I guess that's the misconception for me. Does that make sense? It's like it's always been a singles world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean that's how bands have made their money through the years, is off the single. Because in particular, when I worked for bands in the 70s and 80s, I mean, you know, when they put out an album and there was 12 songs on it, you know, like for instance, Here's a prime example. Katrina and the Waves, Walking on Sunshine.
Yes. Great song.
Just so you know, there's 9 songs on that album. The album was awesome.
That's awesome.
But it was only known for 1 song.
Yep. Sure was. Sure was.
The second album, they tried to pick up where they left off on the first one, and they waited too long. And they actually hit it at like the 18-month mark. And if they were about 3 or 4 months quicker, they may have picked up the tagline on their second album, and they may have done well. but they didn't.
Wow.
And unfortunately, now I think it, I've seen the other day, it's some kind of medicine on TV commercial that pays in the background.
That's crazy.
And look how many during the British invasion between 79 and 86.
Right.
Look at how many one-hit wonder albums there were.
There were a ton.
So many albums that, you know, only one song picked up because the artist is like, we want to do this, and we want to, you know, we want to put these out slowly so we last longer. This is a slow death.
Wow. Well, there was a lot of artists that kind of went in, you know, and created some music, and you know, that had some promise, you know, so I'm not gonna kick them in the, you know, kick them in the knees.
But they made some bad business decisions.
They also, now let's remember, you know, there were several artists and stuff that kind of came in that needed some hired guns, you know, which I don't know, for those of you, I've mentioned it once or twice for everybody that's tuned in on Netflix, you know, I can't tell you how many times I have watched the Hired Guns show, okay, documentary. Also, the other one that I've watched it, like, I kid you not, Junior, I've watched it 5 times this week, is 20 Feet from Stardom, okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. About the backup singers and stuff. And there, that was a thing, you know what I mean? Because those people made a lot of flavor for that music. Those people made a lot of the hooks happen. Those people made a lot of the melodies happen and stuff like that. Those people helped some of those artists make their hits. That made that people are still singing in their head to this day from those times, you know. And so, you know, talking about the one-hit wonders and stuff like that, you know, there's a thing, you know. They're known for the songs that they were the one-hit wonder for, that they actually got help with in the studio and things like that. But, you know, can you remember all the other songs that they did on their own? No. No. Yeah, right?
And the sad part is most of them toured the United States during their time with the one song with some big band.
Right.
You know, and even at the show, because people would say, well, they only got one song out, so we'll go there just before they go off stage because that's going to be the last song they play.
Because so that's how everybody plans their set, right?
Other songs that were on the album, or possibly a cover of a song that they'd done off of somebody else's album, and you know, they never realize what they lost. I mean, unless you were somebody like me who bought the vinyl, or you know, this is really before CDs came out, so I had cassettes and vinyl. But you know, I would sit there and I'd be like, okay, so this is the hit. So you listen to that once or twice, you kind of get in your head what's going on, and then you start listening to the rest of the album. You're like, wow. I can understand that one not being it, but man, this is really a good one. And you would think that that would be like the next hit, and then, you know, just either a bad business decision or,
right,
you know, they were too stuck on the hit song that it never really came around. And now, believe it or not, some of the songs that came out, especially between like 79 and 91, in that little rock era right there, kind of before it changed to grunge, you know, a lot of them, like you hear now.
Right.
I mean, like, we've talked about this song before, Appleville.
Forever Young.
Appleville. Yeah, Forever Young.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, how much did you hear that in the 80s? I think it came out in 87, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I danced to, like, every prom in high school to that song, too.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, how many times did you really hear that on the radio? Yeah, you didn't. But now, you know, those guys are playing overseas, and the rock industry in Europe and the music industry in Europe is different than what it is in the United States.
It's completely different. It's completely different. You know, it is.
Those guys are selling out 60,000 seats on a weekend for songs because over there, when they released it in MTV Europe and all that stuff came up, they had 3 or 4 videos for that album, whereas the United States, they were trying to be mainstream, they were trying to give you the cut. So every hour, they had 10 or 15 videos that they played every hour for you, and you would get them every hour.
Wow.
And over there, they would play it like every 5 hours, but they would have like another song that they would play in between the 5 hours from the band.
Right.
So it was a little different.
Right. They do a lot of things different. I mean, you got to remember something too, you know, Junior. I mean, culturally, you know, it's so much different, you know, there versus, you know, the things are in the United States. Look, I'm smack in the middle of the United States because I know we got a lot of people that tune in from outside of the area. And, you know, and I have such respect for all of you to the point of almost jealousy. And this makes no sense because I come from a town that is rich in music heritage, you know, but I am so envious of how those countries just really support, make waves, and make way for music. You know what I mean? And how people, you know, it's a thing with them, you know, to go in and see and do and be a part of this culture. And it's one of those, you know, unfortunately for the United States, I mean, there's a lot of entitlement. There's a lot of, you know, and I'm talking about the fans. You know, I'm not even talking about artists at this point. You know what I mean? But right. Mm-hmm. To get out and go see people and play and, you know, and things like that, you know, and it's, you know, we have Memphis bands that will step foot as soon as they put their foot on, you know, on the UK ground. I mean, they are literally rock stars, and not because they're trying to be, you know, I mean, it's they show up and the red carpet comes out, you know, stages open up for them, and, you know, and people are able to, you know, playing and gigs and make friends and stuff like that. It's quite different. And it's one of those things where, you know, I am very envious, you know, as far as that vibe. I really am, you know, but what's the trade-off? Well, we got the talent.
and the problem is having two cultures. We know what worked in the United States and what didn't. We know what worked in Europe and the rest of the world and it didn't work.
Sure.
So why doesn't somebody just sit down and say, hey, this worked in the United States and this worked in Europe. Let's combine these.
Right.
And make one thing out of it. Or these didn't work, so we're not going to use those. But let's modify them a little bit and throw them in with this and see what happens.
Right.
No one has ever done that. And I've said that for years. You know, like, if it didn't work, you know, I'll just open up the window and throw it outside, and the birds, you know, picked it up and flew away with it. You guys forgot where you came from, you know? I mean, I'm a little old school, you know what I mean?
No, I get it. No, I totally get it. And you're right, you know, though.
You know, I mean, and the first thing, and you know, this is a pet peeve of mine. This is probably the biggest pet peeve in the world. And I've slapped people in the back of the head for it.
Uh-oh.
They always say, well, you got to think outside the box. You got to think outside the box. Listen, the box is a box. It all fits inside of a box one way or another. All you got to do is rearrange it. Listen, I came up. When I graduated Berkeley in 78,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I wanted an internship at a record label. Physically, a thing called a typewriter now. Some of you may not know what that is. You put a piece of paper in, you know, and I'm still not a typer. And then you had to get the little pencil if you made a mistake and correct it. And then you had to fold it up, put it in an envelope. And then, you know, you had to walk down to the post office, and they had to put a stamp on it, and it mailed. You know, probably 4 or 5 days later, it showed up wherever it was going. And then, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, you get a thing back. It's a little different now. You can get somebody's email address, somebody, an A&R person at a record label.
Right.
And literally, within 3 seconds, you literally can fill their mailbox up with every song you've ever done, every photo you've ever taken. So it's a little different.
Isn't that crazy? But that's kind of crazy to you, isn't it?
It is. But talking about the box, you don't have to change. You don't have to take. You don't have to think outside the box. You just have to change what's in the box to make it fit.
Yes.
And over the course of, you know, it was 43, 45 years I was in the business, you have to. You just have to adapt what you did then and what you do now. Like when I got out of college, there was a certain way we played guitar because we didn't have wireless, so you didn't sling them around your neck.
Right.
Because there was a cord, but you know. In the 90s, when that little thing came around, I was slinging that thing around my neck like it was nothing. so, you know, technology has changed and all, but you don't have to think outside the box.
No, you don't.
You put everything in the box and you just rearrange it, you make it work for you, it will be fine and you'll be fine and everything will just work fine for you.
You're so funny because I think I think I said that one time. It only took me one time to say it to you, man. And it was like, I'll never say that ever again. Ever. 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 And it was probably one of the coolest lessons that I had ever learned. Because, you know, what it made me do, you know, for myself, you know, it made me look and go, okay, you know what? Why am I looking out? Because I kind of have everything I need right here. You know what I mean?
It's exactly right. I mean, it's all I do. You just got to rearrange it and modify it a little bit to make it, you know, in today's times.
Right, right. It's
I still, even though I'm retired, once a year I have to do the yearly meeting, and that's part of my thing.
Right.
And you know, somebody said it the other day. I got on the speakerphone because they were calling it all from around the world. And I said, listen, you want something outside the box, you go to Taco Bell. You know what I mean? But you guys are wasting too much money of thinking of stuff outside the box, because at the end of the day, you're still going to take the cover off that shoebox, and the same exact things are going to be inside that box, and all you got to do is rearrange them and make them work.
There is something just almost religious about that statement. You know, I'm telling you, this is me talking to everybody else. I mean, there really is. You know, it's really, try it. Try it, you know, and I, you know, I endorse that statement because I'm a product. it's funny because, you know, you can apply it to anything, not just the music business, anything, you know.
Anything.
Yeah, we did it with radio, you know, and it was, I mean, and there's a funny thing for us in that, we brought back, you know, the stuff that works. We're doing the things that work. And, you know, one of the other predictions and stuff that was coming up, you know, this year, which I think is kind of funny. You can tell when people really don't know what the hell is going to happen by when these articles come out. Okay. Now, 5-6 years ago, I mean, predictions were flying out, you know, by the end of November. I'm talking about in quantities. Everybody had an opinion. Everybody knew what was going down. Everybody knew what was going to be happening. You know, there was lists, you know, and even when I started this show around the world, you know, there were still industry lists and stuff. Man, it is like the total, you know, Wild West. You could hear the whistle. You know, and then you'll see a little statement here. You'll see somebody who's confident here. And then the two or three articles that are out, they're like, okay, we went to the big guns, you know, the people that like started stuff, and we asked them because we didn't want to tell you what we thought. You know, right? It's funny because one of the articles, which I thought was kind of, I don't want to say dumb, but they made the comment about, you know, this is the year that everybody is, you know, your individuality, you know, and being original, whatever, is going to be your ticket. And I got to laughing at this because I thought, that's always been the ticket, because if we've already got one, why would we sign another one? You know what I mean? It's already been done. That statement made no sense to me. But going,
and they keep doing it to themselves. And then that's why a lot of these A&R people, you know, when they get into a band and the band's like, well, you really didn't do nothing, because they're so stuck up in themselves, they get lost in themselves.
Right.
It just doesn't work for the band or the artist or whoever it is.
Right.
So, you know, and there needs to be, you know, and I've said this even when I worked for the label, you know, I say, listen, you know, you guys don't know what you're doing. They say, well, what do you know? I said, well, I was on tour. I used to play on tour, so I knew what it's like on that side of the fence. Then when I had to retire from that, then I came into the office, and then I knew this because my family had been in the office side of it. I came into that, so I already knew some of that. And I'm like, this is what you need to do to make this easier for them that are playing in the field. And then the people playing in the field need to do this to make it easier for the people in the office.
Right.
You did a few things, and they made some changes. 99.9% of them, they all look at you like, really? You know what you're doing? I think I do. I've been on both sides of the fence.
You do, and you have quite the insight. You know, my father was a chemical engineer. I mean, he's still with us, but, you know, obviously retired a long time.
Right.
Chemical engineer, and you already know how that mindset is, okay? Right. It's very similar to an artist to a certain extent, you know, because they get all crazy up in their head and stuff. And oddly enough, you know, father and grandfather. A lot of people don't know this. Were soprano singers. Also, my grandfather was. He was a multi instrumentalist. He was illiterate. He couldn't read. He didn't have past the 8th grade education and stuff. But he could play every instrument that was created. And music and wood and all this other stuff. It's kind of crazy stuff. Same mentality. You know, my dad. He always tells me. He said, you know, 9 times out of 10, he goes, when you are trying to solve, you know, something or make something really kind of cool happen and make something magical happen, he goes, normally it's one of the easiest things to do. You're overlooking something very simple. It's a very simple process. 9 times out of 10, you know, when, you know, if it's something that's completely complicated, that is not the answer. 9 times out of 10, if you can't figure something out, you can't turn something on, you can't. It is always something simple. Pay attention. A lot of people try to make everything, you know, make it rocket science.
Yeah. I mean, you think that you're inventing a way to make it easier, but yeah, it's been around long enough now that there's enough people who've done it who do it the easy way themselves.
Well, yeah. Was it? There was one conversation you and I had one night, and it's the same concept about music. And actually, I also had the same conversation with a friend of mine who's no longer with us, you know, who was also a guitar player, for that matter, that there was a thing about music, and it was the air in between the notes that spoke. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, without having to fill it in with every note on the planet. You know, being able to, you know, when there was actual air and space in between phrasing and notes,
right?
There was something to be said, you know. And I didn't even think you and I had that long conversation about that.
Yeah.
You know, makes sense.
People just, you know, it's great that they have enthusiasm, want to be a rock star, all that type of stuff, you know. But there's people out there who will actually help them, who actually know something, who have done, you know, this. Quite a bit. Like I said, I was in the, I don't know, 45 years, whatever it was.
Right.
It was my part of it. So.
Right.
And that was on both sides. I mean, I toured, and I worked in the office after I had to retire from touring.
Right. You've done a lot of stuff, you know. You've done a lot of stuff.
Couple.
You played with, you know, and toured with a lot of artists as well.
You know, I did a few things.
And he's not going to give us a list. Okay.
No. it's not really that big of a deal, you know what I mean? I mean,
well, not to you.
We've done, you know, I mean, I've done a few things, sure.
Yeah.
I've been real fortunate in my career, and I've tried to help a lot of people out in my career,
right.
Even after my career, since I retired from the label.
Right.
And, you know, you still, you know, these people are like, well, what do you know? I mean, I made a living for 45 years, though. I think that would say something.
Right.
I think you're crazy. Okay, do it your way then. And then, you know, 3 months later, you see that you're trying to put another band together because they have absolutely nothing.
So, I mean, what's your insight? What's your feeling, you know, about the music business? I mean, truly.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, okay, we're going into a new year. Now, at the beginning of this conversation, you mentioned, you know, a couple of things that were probably going to happen. Then it was going to take some time. It wasn't going to happen overnight. We know that.
Right.
There has to be a thing for you, Junior, having been in the business as long as you have, okay, to save, you know, all that is good about the business. You know what I mean? How do you feel about where things are right now?
Well, I don't feel they're in a good place. I mean,
right.
I think there's still a lot has to be done. I'm hoping that with the reorganization of what they've done over the past, you know, 12 to 18 months with some of these labels and people involved, that they've put a little bit into, you know, getting people where they need to, you know, to launch something. To me, I think it could be a lot more, you know, basically artist band friendly.
Yes.
For that to happen, there's a lot of things that the artists and bands need to do for the labels.
Gotcha.
As I said, I've been on both sides of it. I kind of know what's on both sides. So it's just one of those things. And in order to ever have that good relationship, it's going to have to be, you know, both ways. You know, a lot of bands don't want to listen to nobody because they always hear the story about how some label, you know, screwed somebody.
Right.
I hear it when I work at the label. I hear it all the time. You have to read emails. Well, you know, so and so screwed us because, you know, well, you didn't do your part of it. So you didn't fulfill the contract.
Right.
You know, so, you know, there's always two sides to every story. And then there's the truth.
The
truth to me is, I can have an artist, you know, and I did a lot of complaints when I was there. The artist would say something. He said, well, you know, you guys failed on this, this, and this. And then I would say, you know, you're right. But if you read your contract,
yes,
if you would have supplied X amount before X date, we would have done this for you. But we couldn't do that without those six songs you promised us.
Right.
And then they're like, yeah, I kind of understand that. So there's our side, which was the label. And then there is the side of the artist or band. And then there was, you know, the truth. And the truth is always what's in the contract.
Yes.
You know, because, you know, the label signed it and the artist or band signed it. You know, so when they get back to that and they start doing that, I think the music label will change. A lot of things have to change in the music business if it's going to keep going, because, you know, these people, these big names that are making, you know, $1,200 a year off of 65 million, you know, plays, it's just not working.
No.
A lot of money that's put into production, a lot of money put into touring. You know, and you know, that's why, you know, tickets are so high, because everybody's trying to get their hand in. There's a convenience fee on everything.
Right.
You know, there needs to be somebody has to monitor this, you know, and maybe that first step is this past year over the summer when the President of the United States signed that bill. You know, we'll see what comes in part two of this. You know, I, if I'm not mistaken, I think there was three parts that are eventually supposed to come out of this. So.
You're right. Yeah. You're right, because I think you had read on some of that same stuff, too.
Yeah, it's going to take, I think they said, like 14, 18 months for the third part, you know, to eventually come out and all. But they have to do it in stages because they couldn't change the ways that it was done right away.
Right.
So we'll see. But it's definitely a plus. I think that there's several major labels.
Mm-hmm.
Around the world that are trying to jump on that.
Right.
And as far as I know, and I really don't, because I haven't talked to anybody about that bill that was signed, but I would assume that the labels were kind of behind that to help the artists out, because that's a pretty big bill to get passed, you know, through the legislature.
That is a big, that's a real big deal, you know, and yeah. I mean, mind you, there's a lot of people that are going to say, you know, some of the independent, you know, organizations and stuff like Impala, you know, and a couple of others, you know, as far as, you know, AIM and everybody else, you know, on the global side of things, you know, pretty much had to, you know, something to do with that. But that's another example that I try to remind everybody, is that they too have to have relationships with the bigger guys, you know, in order to make the world go round. You know, and that's one of those things that focuses that everybody's kind of holding hands on that one to an extent.
And they had to make the first move and so to happen. But I think that they're going to come together sometime in the next, probably this year. I don't know exactly when, but I would think this year, and they're going to start doing something to change that. And I think it's going to take a couple of years for it to change, but I think the music business can come back. I think everybody can legitimately make money off of the streaming stuff and things that, you know, they weren't able to make money off of. And
right.
People ripping off somebody's stream off of this and playing it and not paying for it. You know, so there's a lot of things like that need to be worked on in order to make it happen.
Perfect. Well, I can't wait for that for everybody. You know?
Whoever got it has got a big job ahead of them, because I'm looking from the outside in and I know a little bit about the business, but there's definitely a lot there that needs to be taken care of. So
there is
the first step was definitely what they signed in the bill.
There is a lot to be taken care of. Well, I tell you, man, that's a lot of good insight. I could keep you on the phone for the rest of this show, Junior. I could.
Not me.
You know, I want to take this time to thank you for always being so supportive, you know, of us here at Radio Memphis, and especially of myself and what we do here. And I'm so glad, I was so surprised that you had time and you actually had called in and stuff, because I was totally going to just rock out some tips and advice and just, you know, come up with stuff and all that good stuff. But and yeah, I could not have done it any better than you just did.
I appreciate the opportunity. Like I said, since I retired, February would be 3 years.
I know.
I've only done one other radio interview in almost, 34 months. So.
See?
And that was Radio Memphis.
See? How lucky are we?
In 34 months, I've done two interviews with the same radio station. That's just because, I've known Rick forever.
You have.
We're friends, and I try to help out when I can.
Absolutely, and it is most appreciated. Most appreciated. Well, I know you've got to. I know you got to get back to a couple of things, and stuff like that. I'm hoping that you and I can catch up. Maybe the next week. See how things are going for you and all that good stuff. I probably need to play some commercials, and I'm going to have to explain to the program director, how that went. But that's okay.
He was on the phone with me.
You know what? I think I'm going to totally use that one. I'm going to actually use that and be like, you know what, man? It was Junior. I'm good.
Call me. I'll tell you.
I'm gonna do that. So I need to pay some bills, and I'm gonna play some more music for everybody. I'm gonna get into some stuff. How about that?
There you go. And you guys, everybody there, have a happy New Year's, and we'll talk to you again.
Absolutely. Happy New Year, Junior, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Junior Grigaitis. This is somebody that we at the station have known for quite some time. He has been in the industry, and he's been on the musician side as far as obviously, and the actual music business side of things for many, 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 many years. And we have been able to gain a lot of insight on some of the things just by virtue of knowing him and having a great relationship and a great friendship. Cool thing, though, for somebody like that to be able to call out of the blue and him not having, been able to talk in a public format like that. So I'm hoping that everybody got a little something out of it, because if you didn't, you need to probably go back and listen. In fact, I promise, what we did was we did capture this interview, because I'm slick like that. And we did capture this interview, and we're going to make sure that it's going to be up and available on Radio Memphis On Demand, radio-memphis.com. So you'll be looking for that. And in fact, I think, it's funny. My world works in some really cool and mysterious ways, because one of the new things that I was trying to kind of jump into, you guys know I'm always trying to add some new stuff, to the show, or I'm always trying to add some new tidbits or, some new advice, pieces and stuff like that for you guys. And I had already kind of somewhat put together, an idea for a music industry air check with D, and I think I just got the first episode. So if you guys are just now tuned in and you're wondering what the hell D is even talking about, yeah, you need to go to radio-memphis.com, all right, and check that out, because that first, episode one will be going up in this next week, just in time for the new year. And what a way to kick the year off. If you learn anything as independents and unsigned from any of that conversation that we just had just now, guys, what you really do need to do is kind of pay attention. CDs, yes, they're still needed and stuff. You can consider that, your demo tape, all right, in order to get, as far as, major pull, major push, major play. Vinyl, yeah. Vinyl's still a thing. Vinyl never really went away. Vinyl kind of dosed down a little bit, but at the end of the day, vinyl is still king, all right? And as you heard us talk about a little bit about album art and stuff, well, that's a thing again, all right? And those of you that grew up, with the albums and the album art, you'll understand what that means. Well, those of you that are kind of new and coming into the market and coming into the scene and understanding what the effect that album art has, it's going to be probably one of your biggest marketing tools, all right? It's going to be it's going to be the biggest message that you send out to your fans and anybody who is going to listen to you as to who you are and what your brand is, as a group, as an entity, as an individual, as an entertainer, all right? And this is going to be one of those things where, the deals with A&R, which has already been happening. This is not new. This is not new news. This is also not new. Okay, it's just now becoming on the forefronts and stuff. There's a lot of people that are searching out. There's a lot of people that are scoping. There's a lot of people that are paying attention. There's a lot of people that are trying to make alliances again. And if you think about it, you know, when the business was booming and the business was rolling and the business was doing some fantastic things, you know, these people were making those relationships. You know, you're making the relationships with the bookers. And I'm not talking about, hey, book my band. You know, hey, here's some money. You know, write a PR list. I'm talking about make relationships with the managers, the bookers, the PRs, you know, the A&Rs, you know, the radios. That's how this business works. That's how this business has always worked. So, you know, little music industry air check for you guys right here on Radio Memphis Around the World with me, D. And I tell you what we will do throughout the year. I'm going to try to have one for you every week. And we're going to see what we can kind of step into. And you and I are going to learn about the business together this year for 2019. That I promise you. So in the meantime, since we've been talking this entire time, I need to stop down, pay some bills. But I tell you what I will do. I got that rock block. I promise. Yes, you guys deserve a rock block. I have some artists of the month for you right here on Radio Memphis Around the World. We're going to kick it off for you guys, man, right after this with a little Greystone Canyon out of Australia, speaking of Down Under. All of that's coming up next right here only on Radio Memphis.
You've been listening to the Music Industry Air Check with D. Now remember, you can only get air check like this on Radio Memphis.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated and originally aired live on Radio Memphis. Any offers or advertisement contained may not still be valid. All rights are reserved and copyright is held by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more, look for all the RMOD players at radio-memphis.com.